I'm Megan Luscombe and you're listening to season 4 of my podcast, Real Talk. This season focuses on some of the most important topics surrounding personal growth, relationships, and business. So settle in and let's chat. I acknowledge the Boonwurrung people, traditional owners of the unceded land on which I live and work and record this podcast, and pay my respects to elders, past and present. On today's podcast, I'm talking to sociologist and coach Michael Bajani, all about toxic masculinity. Michael shares insight about his own journey with toxic masculinity and how it led him to create his Instagram account, Fight Toxic Masculinity. All of his information is linked in the podcast description, but for now, let's get into it. Here we are. You are the first guest on the fourth season of Real Talk with Megan Luscombe. And this is a bit of a surprise to my followers, actually, because I told them that I was going to stop the podcast at season 3. I wasn't going to go and do anymore. So this is going to be a first episode into season 4, which is a bit of a surprise for everybody. So I'm really excited to have you on. And as opposed to me introducing you, I would love you to introduce yourself to my listeners so they can get a bit of an insight as to who you are and why you do what you do. And for those of you who don't know, this is all coming down to the incredible Instagram account, which is Fighting Toxic Masculinity. I'm going to link all of it, but please tell my listeners who you are.
Yeah, well, the first guest, I don't know, I was the first guest of season 4. That's so cool. It's like, oh, I feel like a VIP.
Yeah, you are.
Wow. Well, thank you. Well, okay. So a quick introduction. So I guess my name is Michael Bajani. I'm a sociologist and a life coach, and I focus on helping men and everyone else remove toxic masculinity from their life. Mm. I was a former toxic man, very, very toxic man. And it was in therapy where I realized a lot of my issues stemmed from like toxic expectations placed on men or like... Yeah. The lack of helpful, like mental health, really, for men, all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to be part of a loving solution. Mm-hmm. And so I started the page Fight Toxic Masculinity, I think 2019, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. And it was just honestly at the beginning, just to pass the time. Mm-hmm. I had no job. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to do something to like stay out of trouble and, you know, like keep busy. Yeah. So I started posting random mental health memes that I was creating online. Mm-hmm. And then it took off kind of fast. It started growing and people started responding well to it, all that kind of mm-hmm. stuff. And a few years later, now I get asked to be on podcasts and
do all this kind of stuff. Right. So. The benefit of social media. And I'm really intrigued and also really. I think it's fantastic when somebody can say that I took myself to therapy, because I think that's one thing in particular that I think most likely men aren't talking about a lot is going to therapy. So you said you went to therapy and identified that you had some toxic behaviors. What was the, if you're happy to share, what was the conduit that made you go, I'm going to go to therapy?
Yeah, it's very, very... simple, really. I was in trying to think the best way to, you know, it's fine. It's something I talk about so much, but I still like have trouble having a neat way to kind of say it. I was in a relationship mm-hmm. with someone and we had broken up and stuff. And the more I was reflecting on the relationship, because we broke up and I was kind of like, I just blamed everything on her. And I was like, okay, good. Thank God I got rid of that person in my life.
Okay, yeah.
But then the more I sat and honestly thought about what it was, mm-hmm. The more kind of mortified I was by my actions, more ashamed I was, the more I was like, I was a horrible person and this and this and this and this. And then, one day in November in 2017 or 16, I hit rock bottom and I sat on the floor of my apartment with my dog on my lap. And I don't know, everything hit me, like the fact that all the coping mechanisms I were using were like that I felt terrible and I wasn't developing in my life. And I wasn't developing the kind of connections and relationships I want. I didn't have any kind of anything I really wanted emotionally in my life. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know why at that point. I just knew like this was bottom for me.
Okay.
And the next day was a group therapy session I used to go to for addiction.
Okay.
And part of the group therapy session was you got to see the counselor one-on-one beforehand. So she's like, "Hi, Michael, like, what do you want to talk about today?" And then she's like, "You look different today. What's wrong?" Mm-hmm. I didn't know what to say. So I just looked at her and I was like, I think I'm an abusive person. And like, I don't want to be. And she was like this small, super sweet lady. And she was like, "Okay, sit down." And like, no judgment, no nothing. And then, mm-hmm. Yeah, we got to work. So that's really how it started. Just me. Yeah. Looking back at my actions and stuff and realizing that it wasn't okay.
And through that looking back, was there anything that you were quickly able to identify as opposed to maybe what you learned throughout the process of therapy?
Yeah, I knew very, 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 very early on that, like, what's the best word? Like, I was full of self-hate.
Yeah, okay.
I knew that, like, I wasn't an expert. I didn't know much, but I knew deep, deep down. I was always a very introspective person. So, like, mm-hmm. I knew very, very quickly that everything that was happening stemmed from, like, a lack of me loving myself.
Yeah.
And I think, in my second session, I told my therapist, like, I think I ended up being so full of self-hate that, like, it started pouring out on other people.
Yeah,
it had nowhere to go in myself.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, so that was very, very apparent very early on. And then, obviously, I learned a lot of things as we went on.
Yeah. And do you often in obviously you running your account and the, you know, messages that you're sharing, do you often get any feedback or any negative feedback from men who are perhaps feeling that same type of maybe self-hate towards themselves?
Mm. Feedback is something I get a lot. I get a lot of feedback. 65% of the time, like statistically, like on my insights and all that kind of stuff, it's from women.
Okay.
Mostly to women being like, "Oh yes, thank you for talking about this," or like, "Yes, like my boyfriend," or like my dad or my brother, or you know, like, or sometimes even them, they're like, "Oh, even I have like toxic masculinity beliefs about this and this and this," and like, "Thank you for shedding light on it." And then I'll say, maybe 20% of the time, it's men who are like, "Yes, oh my God, yes, thank you so much. Like, I thought I was the only one in the entire world who dealt with this." And then the rest is like, yeah, men who are like, "You're just a beta," and, you know, all these weird
words.
Yeah,
okay. Right. So all these words that are meant to make men feel bad about expressing vulnerability and being open and honest. Right. Okay. So that's the beta. Is that the simps? Things like that?
Yeah.
There's so many words that come out. I cannot keep up. I can't keep up with these terms, but so obviously the beta being that you're not the alpha,
mm-hmm.
right? And the alpha is the toxic masculinity and the toxic man, I suppose, that they are saying is the positive, which really isn't the positive.
And you get messages like, "This is all bullshit. Like, all you need to do is go to the gym and like get laid and like, that's it. That's all you need." Or like,
wow.
Like, "This guy probably has never had a girlfriend in his life," or I don't know, you know, like comments that are like trying to what's the word?
Well, they're devaluing you.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, devaluing kind of the work you do, or like trying to make it sound like it's pseudoscientific and not real science, that kind of stuff.
Do you ever have any comments that are said to you that you may have related to back when you were in that toxic mindset?
Yeah, a lot. Which is why I think I know I've hit something. Like, I know I've touched a good nerve when that happens, because I get homophobic comments, I get sexist comments, I get anti-feminist comments, all of which I did when I was a very toxic person.
So
whenever I get messages like that, I know. Sometimes I DM them and I'm like, "I know, like, you're upset. I know, like, you're hurting, this and this and this. And if you want to talk, like, I don't believe for a second that, like, you're actually angry with me. I think, blah, blah, blah." Sometimes if they're, like, extremely violent comments, I leave them be.
Yeah, of course.
But, yeah, definitely I get comments like that And yeah, right. It tells me that I've hit something important.
Yeah. So it sounds like you actually have a really unique insight into being able to not only identify with the messages that you're using on your platform, but also the messages that you are potentially getting back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So what would you say is the biggest, out of all of the messages that you share when it comes to fighting toxic masculinity, what do you think is the most important one when it comes to how we deal with our relationships?
Oh, our relationships. Oh, I didn't think you were going to ask that. That's a very good question. In terms of our relationships, I'll say what I've learned the most and what I try to like convey to other people is vulnerability, openness, communication are like the most important things you could ever do in your entire life to have, like not just romantic, like friendships, work relationships, whatever, like any kind of relationship in your life. That is the most important thing. And that the things that toxic masculinity teaches you are like not for men or whatever are the things you need to do the most in order to have
a
healthy and like well-founded relationship.
Yeah, okay. And you obviously mentioned that you were able to look back at your relationship and identify your toxic behaviors. What were you doing in your relationship that was maybe perhaps encouraging that toxicity?
It wasn't like, how do I explain it? It's how I lived my life that ruined my relationship.
Yeah, okay.
It wasn't just like I was super healthy, but then only my relationship I wasn't. It was just like I was so unhealthy everywhere that
it seeped into everything.
Yeah, I wasn't authentic to who I was. I would constantly, like by myself, not with anyone, by myself, like force myself not to enjoy certain things that I liked because I was like, oh, they're unmanly or they're not cool or they're not like attractive to a partner. And coincidentally, it's those things that I found when I talk to people now, they're like, that's the most attractive thing. Now that's like the coolest thing. I wasn't taking care of my mental health at all in any shape or form. I had several addictions to like pornography and narcotics. My expectations of what a healthy relationship were unbelievably skewed because of the relationships I saw growing up with the people around me.
I
don't know. There's every single box you could probably take for what you shouldn't do before you get into a relationship I was doing.
Yeah, okay.
And and then my relationship only compounded everything 100 times because it was an intimate relationship with someone else. And then on top of that, the things that like, as an abusive person, made it even worse. So like gaslighting.
Yeah.
Like withholding affection when things didn't go my way, talking down, controlling behavior, like passive aggressiveness, all that kind of stuff made things 100 times worse. So
absolutely. And they obviously do cause negative outcomes. But I think what's really interesting there is when we talk about toxic masculinity, I think people automatically go to like these really outdated patriarchal conditionings and outdated patriarchal behaviors. But I think what's really important to remember is that this toxic masculinity is something that can also be present inside women. It isn't something that is exclusive to men. Obviously, men are predominantly in the toxic masculinity umbrella, but obviously there are women who can have it inherently as well, because we learn it, women learn it too. So I wonder how can the women of the world, how can we encourage men to step out of patriarchal conditioning that isn't working for them in a way that is supportive and not condescending?
I'm a very, 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 very loud and proud feminist. I tell everyone feminism, like the principles, the core foundations and principles of feminism, like helped save my life and turn me into like a well-adjusted person. The way that anyone can help, but especially women, is personally, I think the first thing is to live a life that they want. So authentic, open, communicative. I don't know if they want to be like sexually, promiscuous, whatever, anything that they want. That's the first thing.
Yeah.
And to like, what's the, I don't know the, like the fancy way of saying it, but just like own it, to own who you are, to be
absolutely
like,
to be empowered.
Yeah, exactly. Like whatever floats your boat, whatever you want to do in your life, do it. It subconsciously gives others permission to do the same.
Absolutely.
And then specifically for toxic masculinity, I think it's just about just encouraging, encouraging healthy masculinity. Because also there's this huge, like, as a sociologist, I know also, like, it's not women's job to fix men.
Absolutely.
Women are exhausted enough.
Yes, the emotional labor for women is quite high and unrealistic.
And everything that goes on now is like exhausting to women, like like the Roe versus Wade thing like 2 days ago. Rape culture, sexual assault culture, victim blaming culture, the patriarchy, sexism, misogyny. It's already someone said once that like we're lucky that women only want equality and not revenge. So they have a lot on their plate, and it's not like inherently their job to fix men.
Agreed.
But
for the ones that have maybe a partner or a brother, or for somebody who they do want to assist, obviously we don't want women to feel they have the emotional burden of fixing toxic masculinity. But for the people that they may have in their lives where they do want to be able to positively help, what do you recommend?
To create a safe healing space. Yeah, okay. That's the, like my therapist would say, like our job as people who want to help people is not to do the healing for them and not to do the work for them, but to kind of open the door for them and to let them walk through it. Mm-hmm. And then when they come back from their battle, to like soothe them and like, you know, make them feel okay and comfortable. And I think it may be an unpopular opinion, but I think that like, we're too individualistic in our healing now in society. I think healing is supposed to happen in like in a group and like with people that you love and you care about. It's not supposed to be like okay, I went to therapy and I did everything alone. I didn't bother a single human being. And then I think like things like connection, intimacy, care, communication, just like a hug. Things like that are what makes the biggest difference. So like just care, softness, all that kind of stuff that you usually do with someone you care about.
And creating like, spaces. It sounds like what you're talking about is sort of creating spaces where men as a, you know, as a whole are able to together, you know, embrace the changes and to be vulnerable together. And it doesn't need to be on an individual level.
Yeah, and to like gas each other up, like man, woman, whatever, like it can do so much good to like tell someone like, I'm really proud of you, I'm really proud of like how far you've come, and like I've seen so much changes in you, and like I love you, I care about you, and like if you want to talk, I'm here for you. Even just that is like can do wonders for your mental health.
Do you think that maybe over the past few years, I mean, obviously you working in sociology, you have a unique perspective of being able to really sort of identify behaviorisms in groups and things like that. Have you seen a shift in maybe men in particular being able to be more emotional or maybe more physical when it comes to, you know, hugging their friends, their male friends, or even their female friends? Like, is there a shift coming?
Yes and no. Yes, yeah. I've seen a lot more men. I've seen a lot like personally in my life and like running the page, I've seen a lot more men kind of start to have very healthy relationships with each other, start to communicate more, start to talk more about like what bothers them, physically touch each other more, kind of not sexualize so much relations between men and women, all that kind of stuff. It's definitely getting better. There's still like old school guys who are like, no, it's always going to be like that. Yeah. And there's always going to be men who are extremely toxic but don't want to change. That's always going to be a thing. Like me and my friends growing up, we were like the definition of healthy masculinity. We would always talk about like communicate our feelings. We would hug every single day.
Every day
at school and then like on the weekends. Like it was so healthy. Like when we had a crush on a girl, it wasn't like vulgar how we talked. It was like we had like cute plans, like, all right, science class, like we'll sit like this to force that girl to sit next to like the guy that has a crush on her.
Yeah.
Like, we'll pretend we don't have pens, or, you know, it's, I think what is happening now is that men are starting to understand that like there are human needs, because toxic masculinity does a very good job of making it seem that like men are not human. That like what a human being needs to survive is somehow different to what tough guys need to survive. And I think now men are starting to realize that's not true. That like actually we are human beings, which sounds crazy to say, but I didn't think that way for a long time. So yeah, now men are starting to realize that like there are core things that we all need to in order to live a healthy life, and they're starting to give it to themselves.
Yeah, and it also seems, from, you know, what like some of the conversations I've been having, that men are also starting to realize that even they don't benefit underneath the patriarchal structure that's been perpetrated. And I think for some men, they have maybe not even looked at it from that standpoint, not even considered that patriarchy is going in a negative way for men. Obviously, it absolutely oppresses women. But even men aren't thriving underneath a patriarchal standard where they have to be the tough guy, they have to be the provider, they've got to be the breadwinner, they've got to be the, you know. And obviously working in my realm, I speak to a lot of men very openly and I have very open conversations, but I know that's not the norm. And I'm sure you can agree for your own life that it, you being able to speak how you speak probably is the norm, maybe in your friendship circle, but as the whole, it's certainly not. Do you, would you agree with that?
Yes. For me, in sociologically, there's a phenomenon. It's been years since I forgot the actual term, but I call it disease theory, which is, or it's called Nazi theory sometimes. Okay. So like when you ask historians, what's the first country that the Nazis invaded?
Yep.
Everyone will say Poland. And then historians will say, no, the first country they invaded was Germany. They took over Germany. They made Germany, like, they normalized hate, bigotry, homophobia, racism, xenophobia, all that kind of stuff. And then it spread to other countries.
Yeah.
It's the same with toxic masculinity and the patriarchy. The patriarchy ruins men's lives first. And then these men who are in pain or who have like toxic beliefs go on to ruin the lives of everyone else.
Yeah.
I deal with, because pretty much things are quiet on my page until I talk about feminism.
Yeah. Okay.
And then I get a lot of men who are like, you're a traitor and you're, you know, like.
Yeah. Okay. So it's you against us.
Yeah. And I get comments from men who are like, well, what about this? What about like the fact that men die like more from suicide than women? What about the fact that like most custody battles are awarded to women and not men? And then I always tell them, like, you have every right to be upset about this, but the thing that you're angry at is the patriarchy.
Yeah,
because it's the patriarchy that normalizes things that like all men are good for is violence, so they can't be good fathers, so we're not going to award custody, or that like men are supposed to be capitalist slaves, so like the whole breadwinner thing, that's the patriarchy that normalizes men should work and women shouldn't work. That's the patriarchy. Or that like, the fact that there's no like changing rooms for babies in men's bathrooms, that's the patriarchy.
Yeah.
Or, I can go on and on, but like the patriarchy, that's what normalized all these things.
Yeah.
And, like, you should be angry at those things. And if you want to dismantle the patriarchy, it's good for your health and it's good for the health of like every single human being on the planet. And the only system in the world right now that is its sole purpose is to dismantle the patriarchy is feminism.
Yeah.
And some men listen to it and some men are like, no, this is complete bullshit. I'm not going to listen. They just start hurling insults again.
It is. It's really interesting that you say that, obviously, about the patriarchy and feminism. A few weeks ago, had a client of mine tell me that her husband didn't want to work with me in a couples session because I was too much of a feminist.
Oh, okay.
And I thought it was such an interesting insight that she shared with me, because I thought, if they're his views towards me, what must they be about his wife? Because that was a really telling moment that he had said that I am too much of a feminist. So in his eyes, his wife isn't. So she's part, in his probably mind, his wife is part of the patriarchy. Like, you're one of us, you're one of us. And it took me by surprise because, I mean, I'm very proud of being a feminist and I am always sharing on my Instagram, you know, my views, but equally I'm always sharing my views in support of healthy men and healthy masculinity. Oh. And feminism is about healthy masculinity.
Yeah.
It's not just about women. And I often wonder, do you ever have women coming to your page saying that you need to be more feminist and focus less on men?
I get kind of the opposite. I get some women who tell me that, like, I have no place in feminism.
Ah, because you're a man.
I get comments that are like, who are you to talk about the, like, feminism and, like, this white man is trying to, like, get attention about feminism and, you know, like, it's not for you. And, what? You know, like, go back to, like, I don't know, hanging out with your friends, like, let the women have feminism. Don't take another thing away from women.
Okay. So again, that divisive mentality of it's you against us and okay.
Yeah. And like, and then, also I get comments which are like, you need to be, actually, I've never gotten comments which are like, you need to be more feminist because I post so much about feminism. I think people are like, yeah, I get it. But yeah, I get comments like that. I get comments from men who are like, you are brainwashed. And then I get also comments from women who are like, this is like, I would never like take you seriously. Like, I want a strong man. I want like...
Yeah, I wondered if you got those comments.
Yeah, definitely. I get comments which are like...
Which is internalized misogyny from women.
Yeah. It's toxic masculinity.
Yeah, and it's toxic masculinity.
Yeah. No, I get comments which are like, I talked about crying once, like in a reel. I made a reel about like how good it felt to start crying in therapy.
Yeah.
And then a woman messaged me like a lot, like 10 times. And she was like, she couldn't let it go. I don't know what it was, but like, you know, when you get like a message request.
Yep.
And it tells you like, this person sends you like 9.
Yeah. And then messages. You see it and then you see it. Yep. And it says the number.
Yeah.
Definitely see that. Yep.
It was like, this is so unattractive. Like, get a hold of yourself. And like, no one wants to hear about a man crying. And like, like, what kind of man, like, what kind of, I would never show my son this and blah, 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 blah.
No, there you go. It just shows. And then the cycle is perpetrated. There we go. Yep. We have another child who's brought up to feel that they can't talk about their feelings. They have to shut away and they have to be what a patriarchal standard of man is. And how unfair.
Yeah. I can't remember where it was, but I talked about once like relationships and like equality, all that kind of stuff. And I talked about how a big part of like my recovery was like learning to ask for stuff in relationships. Like, I want to be cuddled and like, it's important for me to like be complimented or like be spoken to romantically or, and then like, it's very funny because a lot of women I've talked to about it genuinely are shocked. And they're like, I have never considered that, you know, like I talked to like, to my ex-girlfriend about it. I was like, how come like whenever like we talk about consent, how come I always ask you for consent and stuff, which is vital and important, but how come I've never, like, you've never asked me. And she's like, I always assume that men are just always like ready to go.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, like, I understand. Like, me too. I always assumed that men are ready to go, but like, you know, things
absolutely.
Like that.
Yeah. No, that's really true.
Yeah. And sometimes I'll talk about that and I get, again, messages from men and even sometimes from women who are like, no, beta, like, no, ew, this is gross. If a man did this, I would never continue and I would leave. And
it's so weird. I mean, and it's, I mean, but obviously these are such outdated societal rules and expectations that are just ingrained into us. You know, and I think it's interesting when I hear a lot of these comments, because I would say that a lot of these male with female comments are very stereotypical to the heterosexual community when it comes to male and female behaviors. Whereas in the queer community, I find that there is a lot more of a balanced equality when it comes to, obviously, I'm in a same-sex marriage with a female, so there is no masculine, you know, quality. Yeah. There is no man. There's no, so, and obviously with my male friends who are in gay relationships, there is a lot of vulnerability and there's open conversations and probably things that society would deem as feminist and feminine traits. But really, it's just humans being human beings and and being able to be themselves. So I often struggle when I hear, you know, oh, that's not manly enough, or if my girlfriend did this, it wouldn't be that, or even if she did that, that's too masculine. And there is also there's toxic masculinity, there is absolutely toxic femininity, but there is toxic heteronormativity as well. And it's just, it's all wrapped up in a nice little, and I feel like when I have these conversations, I feel like sometimes we're just scratching the surface.
I agree. Yeah. It's sometimes like on the phone with my friends, we talk about it and I have to sigh because I'm like, there's like, if I talk about it for 10 hours, it's still not 1% of what I have to say about it kind of thing. Yeah. Like the thing you said about queer relationships, it's something I realized a lot. Like in Canada, the places where I felt the most safe and the most accepted and the most like loving and welcomed, all that kind of stuff, were in queer spaces.
Yeah.
And I'm a like cishet dude. So like the first time I went to a queer space, I thought I was going to be judged. I thought I was going to be like yelled at and kicked out or something. It was like a queer poetry event.
Yeah, okay.
And I love poetry, so I was like, oh, I'm going to go because it's a poetry event. Yeah. Like I don't care if it's straight or queer or whatever, but I went.
Yeah.
And everyone was so nice and welcoming. I never felt like tense or anxious. People were so kind. And then, like when I go to like hyper masculine spaces, I'm like, I hate it. I hate this so much.
Yeah.
And my work as a sociologist is actually, I spend most of the time discrediting society because I tell people like, people just decide these things. Like high heels were worn by men. They were worn by butchers to step like over the blood in their butcher shop. Yeah, that's why it was created. Makeup was created by men. The pink color pink was created by men. I mean, not created. It was worn by men.
Okay.
All this stuff. And then one day someone was like, no, this is girly. This is gay. This is queer. So now men can't do it. And yeah, I spent so much time doing that because I'm like, who cares what society thinks? Like at the end of the day, like when you're 90 years old, you're about to die, you're not going to be like, oh, thank God I made society happy.
Yeah, thank goodness I didn't wear that pink shirt.
And that was honestly like the overarching way I healed, was to just start living a life according to my internal beliefs and not external beliefs. And I found the healthiest people who heal from toxic masculinity or femininity or heteronormativity or the patriarch, anything like that, they live according to internal values. Like for me, I get judged 100 times more now than I did before because, you know, now I live life, I guess, not normally. But I have 6,000 times more fun every day now than I did yearly.
It's more freedom
back then.
Yeah, it sounds like, well, you're now embracing freedom and you've been able to sort of heal parts of yourself that you said, you know, you didn't like, and you've learned about yourself, and now it's that freedom. And I can completely understand that because I relate to it, because that's my life now. You know, I was once upon a time married to a man, and I was living by a very societal and family, what I believed was the right thing to do at the time. And it wasn't until that I left that space and started to just step into, no, this is who I am and this is what I want to do. Yeah. And obviously going against that side of societal expectation. Do I have 6,000 times more fun? Yeah, absolutely. I can completely agree with you. But I also feel like the more you know about, for you, I'm sure when it comes to sociology, I feel the more I know about like psychology and things like that, the more I go, oh, there's so much work to be done. Like, you're just peeling back the, you know, sort of first layer.
Yeah, definitely. My therapist told me something, which at first, like I was so arrogant, which is another toxic masculinity trait. She was like, she was like, I hope you get to a place in recovery where you realize there's like infinitely more that you don't know than you do know.
Yeah.
And I was like, no. Cause like I knew everything and I was so smart and I was getting straight A's in university. So I knew everything in the world.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, maybe like 2 months later, I was like, I don't know anything. Like, I don't know anything about anything in the world. Yeah. And I don't know, every single day I read like articles or whatever, I learn something new. Or when my friends tell me something, like, or like I have conversations like this, I learn.
Yeah.
And you learn every time you learn something, you're like, on top of that, you learn that there's probably 100 more things you don't know you learned this one thing.
Yeah, I know. And I think that's like a really good sign, I think, of vulnerability to learn and to be able to go, hey, I didn't know that. And, you know, I'm going to, you know, take that on. And I would love to know if out of all things, because I'm going to wrap this up now for my listeners, what is one thing that you want all of my listeners to take away when it comes to toxic masculinity?
I'll say two things if I can.
Absolutely.
The first I will say is that recovery is for everyone.
I love that.
Yeah, recovery is for every single person in the world. It doesn't matter like what you've done or what, you know, like the mistakes you've made or the people you've hurt. Accountability and wanting to change and get better and live a healthier life is possible for every human being, regardless of gender, sex, age,
or
whatever. That's the first thing, because I didn't think healing was possible. I was deserving. Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to get like yelled at and like kicked out of every therapy room I went into because of the mistakes I made and the abuse and, you know, but no, that's not what happened. And second of all is, yeah, I guess you cannot hate yourself into a version that you will love. That I think, especially for men, and society in a whole, but especially for men, there's such an emphasis on like discipline and being harsh on yourself and being tough and aggressive and withholding and like ice cold, and nothing good grows in that environment. And there's the only way you can heal is by with kindness and empathy and care. And yeah, those are my two things.
Well, I think that you can't hate yourself into something you love, I think is probably one of the most powerful things anybody could really hear. That is such a powerful sentence and statement. And I think we can all probably listen to that and have that apply to so many areas of our life. So I'm going to say thank you so much for being on my podcast.
Welcome. And thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
No, it's been a pleasure having you. And everybody who's listening, I'm going to link all of these things. And thank you.
Find me on Instagram at MeganLuscombe_. Book a session or say hello at my website. MeganLuscombe.com.au